Hello, my name is Gary Hickey. I work for the National Institute for Health and Care Research, and welcome to our podcast series, Spotlight on Community Engagement and Involvement, Improving Global Health Research and Outcomes Through Engaging with Local Communities. So why are we doing a podcast series? Well, the National Institute for Health and Care Research, an organisation based in the UK, funds research both in the UK and globally. In the global health research we fund, there is an expectation that there will be community engagement and involvement and the development and the delivery of research. But what does that mean? And what does good community engagement and involvement look like? What's worked well and what hasn't worked well? Well, that's what we want to explore in our podcast series. So we'll be talking to community engagement specialists, members of the public, and researchers from across the world to explore their experiences and opinions on all things community engagement and involvement. And hopefully we can all learn and improve the experiences and the opinions of our podcast guests. This episode will explore how the COVID-19 pandemic affected the community engagement and involvement activities of people and how they adapted their community engagement and involvement and research to cater to local restrictions and a changing context. So I'm going to introduce our guests, and I will ask them to introduce themselves. So going from left to right on my screen, so Shahidul, could you please introduce yourself?
Thank you, Gary, and I'm very much thankful to you for inviting me to join this important discussion. My name is Mohammad Shahidul Islam. I work at Childhood Success Foundation in Bangladesh. I also a PhD student at University of Edinburgh. I'm doing my PhD on global health. That's all from me. Thank you.
Thank you very much and welcome. Soren, please introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi, Harry. Thank you very much for inviting me for this podcast. So I am Professor Surendra Kumar. I'm a Dean of Faculty of Medicine and also the country lead for these NHR-funded AF Global Research with the University of Birmingham and University of Liverpool. I'm working with this cardiovascular epidemiology research funded by the NHR. This is a great opportunity for us to build up the local research capacity. Thank you so much for inviting me for this podcast.
Thank you, sir. You're welcome. Roderick, would you care to introduce yourself?
Thank you, Gary. My name is Roderick Sambakunsi. I'm from Malawi. I work for Malawi Liver Welcome Trust. Currently, I'm leading a project called One for All, All for One, which is a vaccine engagement project.
You're welcome, Roderick. Thank you. And Faiza, could you please introduce yourself?
Hello, everyone. I'm Faiza Aslam, an academic researcher from Pakistan. I work at the Institute of Psychiatry, Rawalpindi Medical University, and I manage two NIHR-funded collaborative research programs, which are being led by University of York, UK. I'm delighted to be part of this podcast, and I'm grateful for providing me this opportunity. Thank you, Gary.
Thank you, Faiza. And Faiza, I'll begin with you. So welcome, obviously, to everybody, all of our guests. We're very, really pleased to have you on. Could you tell us, please, a little bit about your research?
Yeah, sure. The two NIHR-funded programs that I mentioned, the first one is IMPACT, that is Improving Mental and Physical Health Together. And it focuses on the world's most vulnerable population, that is people with severe mental illness in lower middle income countries with comorbid physical illnesses like non-communicable diseases. And our goal is to actually carry out health research that can inform the policies and practices in order to reduce the morbidity and mortality that is related to this mental and physical multimorbidity in LMICs. And another aim is to build the research capacity in South Asia. And the second program that I mentioned is DIADEM, that is Tackling Depression and Diabetes. And it is about developing and testing a behavioral activation intervention for people with comorbid depression and diabetes.
Thank you, Faiza. I will actually ask everybody about their work as well, actually. So Shahidul, can you just tell us a little bit about your research?
So my research topic is understanding respiratory syncytia viral infections or neonatal health. I am trying to understand whether early life RSV infection increases the risk of asthma and other respiratory illness among children.
Thank you. And Soren, could you tell us about your research, please?
Yeah, you know, this northern province of Sri Lanka currently recovering from a devastating civil war which spanned over 3 decades. So we have a minimal data on the health status. So then when we collaborated, that actually the grant was offered for the atrial fibrillation. So the atrial fibrillation is the one that heart disease that affect now this and main cause for the stroke. But we don't know then what sort of prevalence, and then particularly there is a warfarin is the only anticoagulant available for the people to do the coagulation, anticoagulation therapy. So in this context, our research team wanted to know, so what sort of the population really affected by the atrial fibrillation, and what are the risk factors really there to manage and prevent the development of the atrial fibrillation.
Thank you, Sarah. And Roderick, could you tell us a little bit about your research and also about how you got involved in this work?
Mine is a project rather than a research. This is a vaccine engagement project that is aiming at co-creating some resources that can be used by researchers to engage the public on vaccines. So what we want is to co-create resources that can promote dialogue amongst the communities on vaccines, which we think will promote trust, but also understanding of vaccine research. The project, what the project did was to identify different stakeholders in different communities in order to be part of the co-creation process. And I came to be involved in this project because I've worked in public engagement within MOW, which is Malawi Liverpool Wellcome Trust, for a long time, leading a department which is championing public engagement and also community engagement. So this is a project that is funded by Wellcome Trust and NIHR. It's a 3-year project, which we intend to finalize in the year 2023.
Lovely. Thank you very much, everyone. Pfizer, I'm going to come back to you. Could you tell us about how community engagement and involvement is embedded in your research and indeed how it's benefited your research?
So the community engagement and involvement was secured in our research programs right from the time when we commenced formulating our research applications. So we convened different community groups, and we asked them about their priority areas in research that could feed into our research questions, and also to that also enabled us to identify the appropriate research methods. And once the project commenced, and when once the application got successful and the projects commenced, we kept community engagement and involvement as a separate work stream in our research programs. And we created working groups for community engagement that convene monthly, and they decided upon the need as well as they planned the research community engagement activities. We set up different community advisory groups for our programs. There were 2 for IMPACT and there's 1 for the DIADEM program that convened at least once or twice a year. And they comprised of patients with experience of long-term physical conditions and their caretakers, family members, and also representatives from various NGOs, which are involved in the non-communicable diseases or in rehabilitation of the physical and mental illnesses, and various community advocacy groups like social welfare representatives. So social welfare representatives, they have substantial experience of working in varied communities in urban as well as rural settings. And these community advisory panels that I will be referring to as CAPs in the interest of time, these CAPs, they convene regularly, and they are, these meetings are led by the chairpersons, which are elected by the panel themselves. And they advise on the research methods, our topic guides, our the tools for the that we use in our research. They also they also helped us co-design our interventions. They also advise on the local context, the language and culture that we use in our research tools. And they also advise us on the appropriate terminologies that we should use. To give you an example, that it was through our CAP that we came to realize that the patients, the persons with diabetes, they are much more comfortable to be called as person with diabetes rather than being called patients, because they told us that it's their lifestyle. So better, instead of calling them patients, it will be appropriate to call them persons with diabetes. And to ensure their voice is being heard and included in our research, we document the reports from these meetings and with their due consent, and after maintaining their anonymity, we present these reports to our management groups. And we also include representatives from our CAPs, from the partner countries, in our the quarterly program management meetings. And even for the Diadem program, recently we have identified a community representative, a community member, who is now being approved to be formal independent member of the program steering committee. So this is how we involve them. Thank you.
Thank you, Faiz. So it touches some real sort of benefits there around the research tools, the interventions, and indeed the language. And I wondered, Soren, does that echo what you've found in terms of benefits of community engagement involvement in your research, or do you have other things to add?
You know, Sri Lanka is famous, now that we have a very good primary healthcare network, and then we have a grassroots level. I belong to the department community and family medicine, and we already have a very good experience of working with the community. And then we have a patient supportive group and also community-based organizations. We have developed kind of a neighborhood network, and then most of these community people, they work with us, and we also able to do the community-based kind of a palliative care and things. So this experience really helped us when we started this project, and then from the beginning, so we also able to convince the people to come and then participate when we were developing all the concept. So as mentioned, or that Faisal Aslam mentioned, that is that kind of a community participation. But more than that, what we have done, then we are able to develop kind of a, using the technologies helpline system. So we introduce a concept, the your health, your one. So then the people should kind of among the people, they able to lead, and we are able to train them. And then they become like kind of a advocates and to convince the people, even when we want to mobilize these people to these field clinics when we want to assess their cardiovascular and diabetic and atrial fibrillation and all the risk factors, so for the health checkup. And then the community, they themselves go and motivate and then encourage them to involve. And also we develop some kind of activity like home gardening, and then providing kind of a nutritional food support and that kind of thing. Also, particularly our research group is above 50 years. So then most of the people, when they are living alone, so they need, they get some kind of a support. And also they all feel by engaging, this active engaging in the research. So then all these activities, we are able to kind of providing kind of a video and the modern technology and things. So we were able to collect all the information and share. And then we are able to develop a group in this thing. Then they can engage and share each other, and then and also communicate each other. And also we develop a kind of a group to contact from a center things. That particularly during the COVID, we had a lockdown. So people can't move out. So then when they want to get any kind of a support, so helpline was very useful, and that was available for 24 hours. So whatever the thing, then they need any kind of a sometime when they are isolated and things, so then they need a kind of a food and other supply. So our team was able to provide that. So that was very helpful when we go to the field. They already engaged with us and they understand what we are doing. And then they also felt that we are really there to support them. So they felt that this is their kind of own project. So then we were able to work with them, even these some of the remote villages in the northern Sri Lanka. So we were able to do and send this community. We are able to approach around 9,500 people in the community as part of this activity. So yeah, we are able to bring them all into one group and to work with us. So that is actually, and also that we got this two-way approach, you know, then top to bottom and bottom top approach. So even these administrators, policymakers also, they are aware, and they were also supporting us then by providing support and things. So this is what that our experience and.
Brilliant. Thank you, sir. Shahidul, I'm going to ask you a slightly different question. And the question for you is, in terms of your community engagement involvement, what are you most proud of?
I like to say that during the COVID, we were, like, as you know, like the last 3 years was very unusual. And all the, we had to change our behavior in terms of research and social practice. And during this COVID, many of the work has been suspended, and we have to customize our research activities. The challenge we face in Bangladesh is, like, during the early phase, we had very limited capacity to diagnose COVID patients. You know, like, only one laboratory has the ability to diagnose the to diagnose SARS-CoV-2 virus, and that's create a huge problem in the health sector, as well as bring a stigma to the patients and the family members, because they, with this, all the suspected patients do not understand what to do next because they are not tested. So they did not able to understand whether they are COVID patients or not, and how to behave like that, how to get take care of that like that. As our research activities were suspended due to government rule and restriction to meet the COVID policy, we converted our research platform as a COVID testing center. So we are the first team who came forward to provide extended support to the government to ramp up the COVID testing. And we started serving 48 hospitals to diagnose the COVID patients. And that way we reduce a little bit load from the health sectors, but what I'm proud of is, like, this was an opportunity where I contributed to serve the people when they needed, because COVID brought a serious social stigma to our people. And that time we had fear, like, whether we'll survive or not, what will happen next, like that. So I feel really proud on that, like, yes, I contributed when it was needed. And second thing is, like, previously, we are working from a low middle income countries. Here, we lack research culture, and our research are fragmented, and so one kind of parachute ecology. Like, we do research based on the donor interest most of the time. And wherever we see like some donor interest, we jump on that. But after joining with the RESPIR, which is funded by NISR, and the RESPIR emphasis on community engagement activities on our research. And they also built some programs under this their initiative. And through these programs, now we have a better understanding, and there was a change in culture in our research. Like now we prioritize the community engagement activities in our research and start thinking on that when we design the studies. And as you mentioned, like we have already formed a PPI group to take advice on the local needs. And another thing we have done is like we launched a program called Building Scientists in Bangladesh. Under this program, we are visiting the schools to talk with the students to motivate them on research. And in this process, we are getting the opportunity to engage the general community people, like the teachers, the community leaders are getting the opportunity to understand about research culture. And also they are being committed to support us when we do research. So in summary, like the cultural practice, the research practice in Bangladesh is changing due to this community community engagement and involvement. And that's why I think that if we can continue this practice, that will bring more benefits to the Bangladeshi people. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you very much there. And I'm going to ask Roderick now, looking back over the last few years that we all know have been very COVID hit, what were the main challenges for community engagement involvement in your project, and how did you address these challenges? So over to you, Roderick.
So yes, indeed, COVID affected us a lot in terms of the activities that we planned. So as I've said, this project depends on the participation of different audiences. So we were supposed to conduct participatory workshops with all the participants, but because of COVID, there were some restrictions whereby we were not allowed to gather. And this affected us because the production of the materials that we wanted, it was then difficult for us to do that. However, because we had some members that are based in South Africa, we decided to do some of the participatory workshops online. And this helped us a lot. And also, COVID affected us in such a way that the materials that were supposed to be probably done by a bigger group, we decided to do participatory workshops in smaller groups, which was allowed at that point. So indeed, we were affected, but however, the fact that we did most of our activities online, this helped us to achieve our objectives.
Thank you very much, Roderick. And Faiza, I'm going to ask you the same question. That, you know, looking back over these last few COVID hit years, what were the main challenges for community engagement involvement in your project, and how did you address those challenges?
Thank you, Gary. The COVID-19 pandemic, it has changed the dynamics of everything from individual level to the global level, and affecting everything in involving the research activities also. I mean, the biggest and the foremost challenge that we faced with the advent of COVID pandemic was the discontinuation of our face-to-face interaction with the participants. And the other thing was that with the imposition of the lockdown, majority of the people, they moved to their native areas or the native villages. They shifted there, and it became impossible for us to access them. And we But I always say that amongst all these uncertainties and the atrocities that of COVID, there was also blessing in disguise. Now I think that we are now better prepared as compared to the previous years. We identified the better means to communicate with them. And it enabled us to identify that in case of such conditions, how can we approach them? And we had online consultations with our participants, or the members of our community advisory panel. And another challenge was that there were a number of rumors or misconceptions in our part of the world that spread through social media. I mean, for instance, that the COVID-19 actually does not exist and it's an international agenda, and the healthcare providers are actually, they are killing the people in the name of the treatment of COVID. So it was very difficult to, there was a lot of fear and panic, that spread in the population. And they were even reluctant to receive the calls from the healthcare providers or researchers. So first, what we did was that we had to actually regain their confidence. We started giving them courtesy calls, inquiring, if they needed anything, and not specifying or not inquiring if they had COVID or not, not to alarm them. And if they mentioned any problems, we facilitated them. We gave them contacts of the telepsychiatry services or telemedicine services that were available in those times, and we told them about the financial support programs and the contacts that the government was providing at those time. And then the repeated courtesy calls that we gave, and we tried to build up their confidence. And we then conducted the online consultation for one of our feasibility study, in which we wanted to convert our face-to-face smoking cessation intervention to a hybrid mode. And we took their feedback during those difficult times. And like I told you, that it enabled us to communicate with those members who were actually not very much vocal during the group meetings. They were more open and they were more confident through this individual telephonic conversation or consultations that we had. So that was really helpful.
And Faisal, that's really interesting. Thank you. Why was it, you think, that they were more vocal? Is it just because it wasn't in a group setting?
Yeah. There's one point that we identified right from the beginning. This community advisory panel is a diverse group. We have patients and caretakers who may not be literate enough to read and write. And we, on the other hand, we have NGO representatives who may be, PhDs or postdoctoral fellows. So there is a diverse group that it's really very tricky to take them together in one meeting. And we have to prepare our materials, keeping this in our consideration, that we have catered to a very diverse target population. To overcome this, we conduct group works. During our meeting, we get their opinions in the form of groups so that they are confident. And we also try to give turns to the participant. But there is one issue: whether there is COVID pandemic or not, there are certain challenges that always exist. And these are the gender inequalities and the inequalities of the socioeconomic groups, or the diversity in the literacy of the community advisory panel members, that we always have to mitigate, or we have to adapt according to it.
Thank you, Faisal. I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to throw it out to anybody, so please jump in. And it's just along the lines of what Faisal was saying. And for me, obviously, lots of stuff, community engagement involvement, went online, didn't it, during the pandemic? And I wonder if anyone could comment about any of the benefits or indeed the drawbacks of working online.
The great benefit is, like, when we are restricted on traveling, still we can continue the programs. As for example, I run a multi-center study across Bangladesh, India, and Pakistan. And besides the COVID, we have also have barriers to travel from East countries from others. Like these countries share hostile borders. Pakistan people mostly not allowed to travel to India. Bangladeshi people often do not allow to travel to Pakistan like that. So in that situation, the online platform help us to organize meetings as well as trainings. But the drawback is like during these online activities, some things can deliver very well, but certain things cannot deliver. As for example, we have a component like using S parameters. And for that, we needed to train the study study team members properly so that they can use that in the community effectively. And due to this COVID pandemics, as well as restrictions from travel restrictions from Bangladesh to Pakistan or from Pakistan to India, initially we arranged an online training. We tried our best and it seems that it's working. But when we went to the field, some sites did not perform very well. And it takes a lot of time for us to establish that, but eventually we had to arrange training in country individually. And that is a drawback, like when you arrange programs in online platforms, sometimes people do not understand the message. And sometimes also people lost the focus due to some other activities, receiving the phones or drawing the attention to the other things. That's why sometimes it's better to arrange in-person meetings. Sometimes it's helpful to arrange online meetings to save the travel times and resources. Thank you.
Thank you, Sadhu. I'm just very aware of time. So before we go on to top tips from people, I'm just going to bring Soren back in to ask Soren, what, if anything, you would have done differently on the community engagement involvement on your project, Soren?
Yeah, actually, that our project, after starting that to the field, we really got this COVID pandemic. And then, as I mentioned, then even our initial this community engagement, then we immediately able to make this arrangement to educate the people about COVID preventive measures and also then provide kind of a online support. And also, particularly during the lockdown, that early part of the COVID, then I'm talking about 2020, this March to May. So then our country that we were on lockdown, that the first, before the, during the first wave of the COVID. So then that was a very new disease. And then because of our team already developed the relationship, that was very helpful for the people to educate. And also we use that opportunity to educate related to the COVID. And then we are able to make use them to do the community surveys, because we were not, we forced to do this community surveys. We can't do this telephone based surveys because we had to go and measure their single lead ECG and other parameters. So then our people were going with mobile phones, and also then we had to use this single ECG thing to do the ECG and see whether they have the kind of atrial fibrillation. So our team, when they go to the community, and we were able to develop kind of a community guide how to make it for the people. Also, the most of the people, our participants are above 50 years, so now they are the risk people, and also with the comorbidities. So then problem, we, our team, the young people, we have to avoid them to kind of transmit that COVID to our vulnerable group. So at the same time, and we should be able to carry out the research. So then we were able to adapt various measures. And also then we particularly get the help of family members to engage. And they were really helping us, and then without the symptoms. And also we send our people for the regular screening for the COVID-19, and also get that kind of certification, then with that only that our people go to their houses, and our the people in the community also, because our this already built collaboration and the partnership really helped us. So then we were able to do the or continue our project without kind of any disruption. This community engagement really helped us. So we actually develop a kind of a mechanism for this mutual understanding, then supporting each other and work together. So kind of a community team building activity really helped us to continue the project with all these kind of challenges during the COVID-19.
Thank you very much. Right, I've got one question, and if each of you could just give me like one line. And the question is, if you were giving advice to someone looking to embed community engagement and involvement in their research, what is the one key tip you would give them? And if everyone could be very quick with this, and I'm going to start with Roderick.
I think the what I would say is make sure that you put aside enough resources, because community engagement and involvement is not cheap. It needs resources to be able to do it properly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Roderick. So resources, Shahidul.
So we should not add the community engagement component in the research as the donor asks for it. It should come from our thoughts, and we need to plan for this community engagement activities when we start thinking of the research projects. Thank you.
Thank you. So making sure we plan for it. Saran.
Really that this community engagement and involvement is a real learning for opportunity for us, but it's really helped us for the developing that ongoing research, and also that our future work with the community. So, and also that our regular meeting with our partners, you know, global partners, particularly University of Birmingham and University of Liverpool, and also that global partners in Brazil and China and their experiences. Also then we share each other in our quarterly meeting. So all these kind of thing helped us and to adapt new mechanism, and also how this community engagement and involvement, now that we are really, we have published one book.
Thank you. And Pfizer, just you, the final word, what was the one tip, top tip you'd give someone for someone seeking to embed community engagement involvement in their work?
In my opinion, one of the most imperative thing is that we should enhance the capacity of the research team. To be very honest, in our part of the world, community engagement is something we were you know, completely naive. And there is one myth that exists, and it's prevalent in our researchers in our part of the world, that they consider themselves superior to the patients or the communities, and they think they are more knowledgeable. So we need to break this myth, and the research team should be trained, and they should be, you know, the biggest advocates and promoters of community engagement. And they should be empathetic towards the community members. And it is our research team that should you know, build in the confidence of the community members. They should also be confident. They should regain their self-confidence, and they should equally treat them and consider them as partners in research. Thank you.
Fantastic, Pfizer. Thank you so much. We have a similar thing, I think, in the UK about the researchers sometimes, and we often refer to it as a hierarchy of knowledge, where people believe that their knowledge base is somehow superior to that of others. And again, what we always tell people, researchers, is that members of the public, communities, bring a different knowledge base, but it's equally as valid, equally as important to that of researchers. But I wholeheartedly back that. So I just want to say to everybody, to Pfizer, to Roderick, to Shahidul, to Saran, thank you very, very much for giving up your time to record this podcast today. And for those listening to the podcast, I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed listening to everybody and talking to everybody. And if you did enjoy it, and even if you didn't enjoy it, please check out the other podcasts that are available. So thank you, and have a lovely day, everybody. Thank you.